Some of you might remember, I love this story of the calling of the disciples. It came to me first, most powerfully, when I was a little girl, there in fourth grade at Sunday school, in the downtown church, Plymouth Congregational Church in Seattle. And our senior minister, a large, looming, tall man, came. He'd visit our classes about once a year, Dr. Caldwell. And he came to church, came to our Sunday school class, sat in our little chairs. Imagine, his knees were practically up above his chest. In his robe, because then he was off to worship. We stayed in Sunday school for the full 2 hours. And he read us this account. And at the close of it, he said to our circle, probably 12, 14, 16 of us, "So what's the most significant thing that happened? What happened in this passage?" Now, we didn't interact a lot with Dr. Caldwell, so this was a big moment. And I think we were a little scared, because even if we had an answer, I don't know if we could have opened our mouths. So Dr. Caldwell asked again, "What's the most significant thing that happened?" Silence. One more, and then finally he bellowed, "They left everything. They left everything. Follow me." This passage challenges us all to think about how we are called to follow Jesus, follow God, follow love, no matter where we are on this journey of discipleship. Follow me. That moment in Sunday school kept ringing through my ears and heart for years as I wondered, yes, what does it mean to be a disciple? How do you do this? I wasn't talking a lot to people about it. This was the 70s. You know, we were playing volleyball across the street at the Y, having fun in church school. We didn't want to, you know, they didn't want to scare us off. But I was wondering and thinking, how do we live? How do I live as a disciple? I want to learn. And do you realize that's what the word disciple means? Learner. We are learners in this. No matter how long we've been in church, no matter how many papers and books we've read, so we put on a robe, we are learners. And I tell you, it's always special to be here at Old South, because I have done a lot of learning here. Back in those final pews, in that corner, in the mid-80s, wondering, yes, as a young woman working in the corporate sector, a consulting firm right over in the Copley Place Towers, how do I do this, God? How do we live this message of hope? Of healing personally, but also as a peacemaker in the world. It was in these pews, in the way back. I love it back there. In the way back, where I realized it's time to jump. And I left the corporate sector and went to work for Boston City Hall, the Commission on Affairs of the Elderly, reaching out to the homebound men and women in the South End and South Boston 30 years ago almost, when those neighborhoods were tough. Reaching out and helping them get the benefits they deserved. My world was blown open. The realities of poverty, depression, addiction. It was then here in these pews again, still not a part of the church. I wasn't serving on a committee. I wasn't even going to coffee hour. Where I realized it was time to jump again. And I left even that nonprofit work to go to seminary, thinking I'd be a hospital chaplain. Certainly not this. But God works in mysterious ways. God works in powerful ways. Follow me. Do you realize this is an account that appears in each of the Gospels? It's a little different in each of them. And you might also note that it's in Mark that it appears in the first chapter, right at the start of the Gospel. That great apocalyptic book, such a sense of urgency. In Matthew, this story appears in the fourth chapter. In Luke, the fifth. In the first chapter, Luke was talking about how Zechariah was being visited to proclaim the good news that John would be born to elderly Elizabeth. In Matthew, Joseph was in the middle of his dream. That's the first chapter in those books. But here, right after John comes practically out of the Jordan, with Jesus, there is Jesus calling the disciples, saying, "Come, yes, follow me. I will make you catchers of people." Listen to that. I will make you catchers of people. Not healers, not providers, catchers, gatherers, community builders, those offering love and compassion and care in this broken world. Follow me. And they did. Now, here's another surprise that has hit me in these years that have unfolded since I was first with Dr. Caldwell, scared to death. Those disciples, those first apostles, it's easy to think that this was a very dramatic moment, which it was, I'm sure. That here this stranger comes up and says, "Come this way. I've got a new career for you." But think about it. These were small towns. These were small days. And scholars have varying views of how well they might have known each other. But it is clear that Peter and James and John and Andrew knew Jesus before this moment. How did I not realize that for so long? They knew him. Now, some scholars believe they might have actually been bound as family, cousins, through the mother's lineage. Others note that as Jesus was beginning his ministry, he was preaching and teaching places. They had listened. They had come. They probably even had stuck around, asked some questions. They knew Jesus, might have been at his bar mitzvah, celebrated festivals, feasts, played as children. No matter. They weren't strangers. They knew Jesus. And Jesus knew them. Follow me. How is it in your place in life right now you can hear, receive this invitation? Follow me. How is it you might be seeking a spiritual inspiration, a partner, someone to journey with through your human existence? Follow me. How is it you already know God? You already understand this Christian story, all of its good news, the ways that it does give us not only the opportunity, but the privilege to bring people together, to fight for justice, to bring peace into this world? How is it your understanding of this tradition, good or bad, and of God in all of God's mystery is being awakened here in these days of Easter. There's so much we can do as good people. So much we can do as church members. Thank you again for being here. Worship, so important. Committee work. All those who are singing and playing the bells, the organ, thank you, the ushers. Those who prepared this holy table for us, that we will then pass one by one by one to each other. So much good work to do out in the world. Thank you for your ministries of mission, of service. But as we think this morning about how Jesus calls those first disciples, I want us to stay a moment in the reeling in first of us. You have your perspective on God. You have your practices of faith. How are you doing? What kind of time are you spending in reflection, in prayer, meditation? How is it, as you claim, if you claim, that this story, this good, great news is the foundation of your life, how are you letting it seep in? Taking it deep. Letting it change your life. Do you pray? Do you meditate? Do you think about these things when you're not here? One of the reasons I selected the reading of this passage from the Gospel of Mark is because of, yes, the apocalyptic nature of that book. They thought Jesus was coming again any minute. They thought the world was about to end, written back in 65 of that first century. Mark, preparing those texts from the stories he heard from Peter, imagine that. They thought everything was going to end soon. And I just want to say that in some ways, as the mainline liberal church, we too are in a time of looming danger. You've heard the statistic. In 15 years, it is predicted, forecasted, that 30 to 40% of our congregations will be closed. 15 years, 30 to 40%. Now, we know that won't happen here. We trust that that will not happen in many churches. But how is it, as disciples, as learners, we're going to be sure? Follow me. Come to me. Rest in me. If we are not steeped in grace, connected with the power we call transcendent and resurrecting, then what are we doing? Well, we're a great nonprofit organization. Very good, very good. But we're not the church. We're not like Peter and James and John, off to truly be fishers of people. Follow me. Walk in my ways. Share with me. This last year, I've upped my prayer practice. I'm meditating twice a day. It's changing my life. sitting in that presence, clearing my mind. I'll never forget the t-shirt I saw up at the Trident bookstore years ago that said, "Meditation, it's not what you think." But how is it we are taking a moment to clear our mind of distractions, of pressures? We live in a challenging, chaotic time. Technology only making it worse. How is it you are sitting, welcoming God's presence that is right there in you already? Sometimes I tell people about this new practice and I can see in their eyes that glazed look. Well, of course you do, Lael. It's what I'm paid to do. Okay, but still, when I hear or receive that look from colleagues, I become concerned. When a colleague says to me, when I say, "I tell you, it's changing my life, this meditation, even just 10 minutes twice a day, maybe 20. When a colleague says to me, "What a luxury," then something's wrong. They left everything behind, Dr. Caldwell bellowed. They left everything behind. What is it you need to leave behind? Obviously, not your fishing boat. But maybe you need to leave behind some television programs. Maybe you need to leave behind those social media devices. Turn them off for half an hour. Maybe you need to leave behind some relationships that aren't serving you well or that you're not serving well. Maybe you need to leave behind some bitterness or resentment. Or maybe you need to leave behind a more serious way you're numbing out, facing addiction, facing your brokenness, facing pain. Real time. Yep, this is the time for us to be reeled in more closely to God so that then when we follow Christ, when we follow this way of love, we are truly catching people. Not just offering services or providing programs. People want to see that love, that light radiating from you. And it does. It can. If and as you sit and soak it up yourself. As Plato reminds us, we become what we contemplate. There's a story about another little girl in Sunday school class. She learns the teaching about Jonah and the whale. Remember that story? God asks Jonah to go off and do work, and Jonah goes in the opposite direction. Well, not to scare you, but he ends up in that mouth of the whale, and in the whale's stomach for 3 days. Like a resurrection account. Well, the little girl is fascinated by this, and she goes to science class when the weekend's over and says to her teacher, "I learned about Jonah, and he was eaten by a whale. Is that possible?" And the teacher looks at her and says, "Well, it's possible for the human being would fit in the mouth of the whale. But physiologically, the throat structure, the human being cannot be consumed. And certainly not them live in the belly like that." But the little girl said, "But this is what they said. Jonah, eaten." And the science teacher said, "No, not possible." And the little girl said, "Well, I'll ask Jonah. I'll find this out. I'll ask Jonah when I get to heaven." And the science teacher looks at this smart little girl and says, But what if Jonah goes to hell? And she says, then you can ask him. We are choosing heaven or hell every moment. We are creating heaven or hell every day. We are sending ourselves to heaven or hell all of the time. Come, follow me. Come, walk